Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Mike TV. This is episode 41, in which we will be discussing Better Call Saul, season 5, episode 7, JMM. My name is Lisa. Joining me is my awesome co-host, Dean. Welcome, Dean.
Hey, Lisa. How are you doing today?
I'm just not making money.
You got that government check coming in the mail soon.
What?
You said you got that government check in the mail coming soon, I guess.
I mean, I hope so. They're saying direct deposit, but I'm like, all right, come on.
Hey, there's never been a more profitable time to be unemployed than right now.
Yeah, they're talking about the business that, or the loan that small businesses can get and don't have to pay it back at the end of this.
I mean, that's not a loan. Anyone on unemployment business can, or anyone on unemployment benefits get like an extra $600 on top of whatever they would make on top anyway.
Yeah, but it hasn't started for us yet.
No, yeah.
Not that I qual. I mean, I'm sure I qualify for the government assistance, but I don't call. But my husband is currently furloughed, so he completely would be applicable for the. For the unemployment, but he hasn't gotten anything yet. Come on. No. I know they're doing the best they can. Best wishes to everyone. We're coming at you in this first week of April as what will surely be the longest month of the year for us.
Yes. God, yes.
COVID check-in. How are things at your house?
Good. It's just like you just said, things have been... When we look back over the last month, things have actually been pretty good, but then we think, but it's not going to be until the end of May, so we have two more months of this. So I'm sure someone's going to take a bat to somebody's face at some point, whether it's one of the kids or me and my wife, I don't know.
Just as long as it doesn't have barbed wire wrapped around it.
It might. I better put my shitting pants on.
Hey, that's a good segue before we dive into this week's coverage of Better Call Saul, another great episode of Better Call Saul. Let's talk about what else we've been watching. And then if there's anything coming up that we're looking forward to, my goodness. Because everything, of course, production and shows have been on been put on hiatus and stopped mid-season. Chief among them is The Walking Dead, which had another great episode. This is like three great episodes in a row. This one was fantastic this week. And it was what was supposed to be the second to the last episode, and now has been rebranded as the penultimate episode. And the baby, I guess, finale will be airing this Sunday. And then they're going to take the finale, which was still, I guess, had some digital effects that had to be done on it and not completed. So they're moving that to sometime this summer.
So it's literally just the last episode that they didn't finish.
Correct.
That's crazy.
So they're making it into like some big summer event now that they've also delayed that other piece of crap, Walking Dead World Beyond. So
Walking Dead, the cool kids.
So, and you know, no surprise, Fear the Walking Dead's production is also in delay. So, you know, just they're dragging out this, you know, what they had was a calendar full of Walking Dead and now it's wah, wah. But hey, listen, this is a great time for people who noped out of Walking Dead. I get it. I know. I get it. But that show, they tried to do some wonky things during the war with Negan, and they tried to jump around in time too much, and the writing wasn't very strong, and so a lot of people stopped watching it. It's much better as a binge because it makes more sense when you can watch them back to back. I'll say that. But once they did the time jump and, you know, Rick and Carl are off the show now. And of course, now Michonne is off the show, spoiler. But the last two seasons have just been unbelievably fantastic. I would say you could just dive right into season 9 and just binge it all. and have a wonderful time and be prepared for possibly what, you know, what's to come in the world.
Well, I've been doing mostly family watching of things, because I'm stuck here with my family.
Yeah.
And so because the kids are home all the time, and also because they don't go to bed till a little bit later, since they're not having to wake up for school, it's, I haven't had as much time to watch, as silly as it is, I haven't had as much time to watch things that I would normally watch. But this week, I a show that I love watching with them, but I enjoy watching it. The latest season of Nailed It on Netflix is out. If I don't know if you've ever watched Nailed It.
No.
It's a baking show, but it's a baking show with complete amateur bakers, and they just make terrible creations of whatever it is they're supposed to create. And the host of it, his name escapes me right now, but if you know what Nailed It is, you know who I'm talking about. She's fantastic.
It's reality show competition crap that I hate.
It's so good. You know, it's good stuff. It's funny. It has good, like, celebrity, hosts, guests on it a lot of times that are comedians. It's funny, but it's a good show.
People on TV, like, this is why I really hate reality show or, you know, documentary style shows. People who intentionally just try to be stupid, and then, you know, people who are jackasses anyway, and then somehow getting famous off of being stupid.
This isn't like that.
Well, whatever. So you're not watching the good shows, like The Plot Against America, which 3 episodes in, I think I'm in. I'm loving this show. Loving it. It's really good. Really intense.
John Turturro still doing well in it.
Yes. Yeah. Doesn't take long for them to get to the presidency. That all happens by episode 2.
Okay.
The election and everything. And then it's in. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before we started recording. I recommend people watch that show for sure with subtitles, because there's a lot of radio broadcasting, 1940s style radio broadcasting going on in the background. And radio broadcasters spoke completely differently back then. Different speech pattern or cadence or whatever. And so I want to catch what's being said on the radio, because a lot of times it is the characters intently listening to what's being broadcast. So, and then they're talking over it as well. So if you watch it with the subtitles, you get both of those conversations fully.
I'm close to noping out on Devs.
Well, I haven't started it yet, so that doesn't sound very positive. Well, I'll push it down on my list.
Try to stick through it, because I know there's only a few episodes left. But
yeah.
The premise of it is really good. It's a really hard sci-fi show, so if you're into that, it's cool. But, man, the lead actress in it is just so bad. She's so bad. And and it's like the dialogue they even write for her, I don't know if it's the fact that she's such a bad actress that whenever she talks, it seems like the writing on it is childish. Because I know this Alex Garland, the guy who created this show, he's made a lot of very successful and good movies. But it's like whenever she talks, it seems like a child, like a 16-year-old wrote this play that they're performing. It doesn't seem good when she speaks. When Nick Offerman's on the screen, it's fantastic, but the lead actress is just bad.
I don't want to disparage her too much, but do you know her name, or if she's been in anything else that you recognize?
She's been in several, I don't know her name off the top of my head. She has been in several of Alex Garland's other movies. Huh. He did Ex Machina, and there's another big one he's done, but he's done a few bigger, smaller movies, by which I mean they're, you know, usually not like big mainstream blockbusters, but he's had some success writing and directing movies.
Well, I don't know. I'll probably dip in, because our new shows, the production, as I've mentioned, it's going to come to a screeching halt. So Devs is out there, but I'll push it down on the list.
Yeah, but wait till it's all out so you can just binge the whole thing.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do, which is what I'm going to do with High Fidelity, too, that other Hulu show that dropped in with Zoe Kravitz, and I haven't started that yet either. So I might move that one ahead of Devs, actually. But I am caught up on My Brilliant Friend Season 2, which airs after The Plot Against America, and I know you don't watch it, but I just can't say enough about this show. This is an Italian show. It's based off, I guess, a trilogy of books, actually. I thought it was just one book, but... So season 1 was off of book 1, and now they're following, I guess, what happened in the second book. And so I presume there'll be a third season as well. But this is also, these are 8 episode arcs. It is subtitled, but it's got the beautiful music of Max Richter, who did the music for The Leftovers. It sucks you in. The performances suck you in. And the story is just, it's just brilliant. I mean, it's brilliant, like it says in the title. I love it. And then I know, Dean, you're not caught up on Ozark. I, of course, finished it all in 2 days. Shout out to Mike Fairbanks, MAF Workshop on Twitter. You know, we were both committed to binging it the weekend it dropped. And I was ahead of him. I was pacing ahead of him by about an episode. We were doing check-ins over the weekend. What episode are you on? What episode are you on? And all of a sudden, he's finished it, and I'm still on episode 8. So, but I did finish it. I finished it 30 minutes before the start of Westworld. So that gives you an indication I was committed. And it is so good. Yeah. And I am so mad that another show on Netflix dropped the same weekend and overpowered every bit of conversation that should have been had about Ozark. But oh no, everyone's also all talking about another show.
You mean the greatest television show that's ever been on ever?
A total piece of shit. I'm so mad at this show. And of course, we are talking about, I don't even want to say the name. You can say it.
Tiger King.
Ugh, yuck. Trashy mad. People being trashy and then being then profiting from their trashiness, right?
No, they're not. None of these people are profiting from anything.
Or what's it called? Getting the notoriety from their trashiness.
Infamy.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. Fuck these people.
One of the guys in jail.
Big cat. You know, I'm a cat person. You know, anybody who knows me, or if you don't know me, I'm like a big time cat person. So I can't stand, seeing any kind of inhumane treatment about, even with big cats. I mean, it just hurts my heart. And to see them in captivity and not being treated right. And then to know that, and I watched maybe a little bit of the first episode or the second episode. I don't even know. Because Sean started watching it because the buzz started. And then I walked in and I sat down. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And then I was like, wait, you really like this? And he was like, actually, I don't. And I was like, well, I hate it. And that was the end of that. Then we stopped watching it. So I don't know what episode he was on, but he was early into it. And from what I understand, spoiler alert, I think everybody in the world has watched it, so I'm not spoiling shit. But I guess she feeds someone to the tiger at the end, someone she has murdered.
No, it's alleged. That's like episode 3, you find out that might have happened.
Well, that's horrible. That is
allegedly.
I'm absolutely out on that.
Her husband disappears, and they just the crazy guy, Joe Exotic, alleges that she fed her husband's body to a tiger.
But
that probably didn't actually happen. It might have happened. Carol fucking Baskin, man. She's crazy. And if you don't know Tiger King, you can't enjoy the plethora of memes that are out there on the internet these days, or the fantastic job that Tim Andrews and Autumn Fisher have been doing this past week on the Von Hessler Doctrine. Their impressions of Joe and Carol are just spot on and to die for.
Well, listen, we've all known people like that, so I'm getting a good laugh at the, you know, the crap that they're saying on the radio. Agree, they're hilarious. And I saw enough of the show and I've heard enough clips of the show, and God forbid you can't escape the show. So yeah. I know I've seen enough of it and have known people like that in my life. I'm, you know, sorry, not sorry to say. I mean, we all have. I mean, hell, we've all had trashy moments in our lives.
Yeah, so I lived in Florida once.
Yeah, I'm not judging here. Well, I am a little judgy. I'm just saying I hate television programming that is focused on it.
So you were never like a Jerry Springer fan?
No, I hated Jerry Springer. I hated all of that, all of it. I hated Ricky Lake, all of that shit. Garbage.
I think you're kind of in the minority of people that feel this way. I do think a lot of people just like watching train wrecks of human beings.
Yeah.
And this is an 8-episode train wreck.
Well, I hate it. So sorry, everybody, but you know, write in and tell me why I'm wrong, but no one's going to convince me that show is not just utter garbage. All right.
It's like, if you've ever seen The Wonderful Whites of West Virginia is another documentary that's out there that's about this group of people in West Virginia, which is the same concept, just the celebrating the white trash at its trashiest. But hey, you know what? We'll stop talking about Tiger King because I got another tiger to talk about.
Look, I'm fine with trashiness because I like Ozark. You know, it's trashy people on Ozark, but they're actors and it's a story. You know, it's not just a faux documentary or some stupid reenactment or people looking at a camera trying to tell a story when really it's they have nothing interesting to say. It's I hate the whole
thing. All right. Well, at least I have another tiger to talk about.
All right.
That is the white tiger. No. The white tiger was unmasked this week on The Masked Singer.
Hopefully and, he was treated justly and fairly.
Well, they did tear his head off.
Oh, no. But
fortunately, it was just a mask. And it was to no surprise of anybody who's been watching this show that it was, of course, a former football great and possibly future great if he ever decides to come back. I doubt he will. But Rob Gronkowski, former New England Patriot, was behind the mask of the white tiger. So they've been calling that one ever since he showed up a few weeks ago. No surprise. This was probably the most predictable unveiling ever of The Masked Singer.
Well, I mean, I am so glad to have learned that. Did he sing well? I can't even
believe he was terrible. He was terrible. And he never even sang. He always did, like, I think his first song was Ice Ice Baby. He always did, and, you know, Baby Got, he always did raps poorly. And he sounded like exactly how you would think Rob Gronkowski would karaoke Vanilla Ice or some other terrible rap song. That's basically what he was. It was very bad.
Yuck. See, again, why waste time watching somebody in a stupid costume sing horribly?
Now, I will say, if you're a fan of costume design, you would bite your tongue saying these are stupid. These costumes are fantastic. They're the most elaborate and well-made costumes I may have ever seen.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, I'm sure.
But other than that, his singing was terrible.
Yeah. Well, lastly, the High Maintenance season 4 or 5, whatever season it is, the finale aired last night. It was so great. This might have been the best season of High Maintenance yet. I think every episode was absolutely wonderful, with the exception of one that I was like, well, that one was just okay. All the rest, so great. I don't know, with your time being that as it is, this is not a show that's safe for kids, clearly, but you know, I wish you would dip back into that show. It's fun. It's really, really good. And spoiler if you don't want High Maintenance spoilers, but you know, I guess the shtick about this show is that they've had this weed dealer throughout and they've never given him a name. He's just called Weed Guy or The Guy. And they name dropped him at the end of this episode. Now, unclear if the name is really his name or some sort of a nickname, because it was his niece that said it, and she was saying goodbye to him, and she said uncle in front of it, so could very well be his first name, but also could be some sort of, like, goofy nickname that she's given him, because the name is not, I would say it's not a real common name. So do you want to hear it? Do you want to be spoiled on it?
Yeah, of course.
Uncle Rufus.
Rufus.
I love the thought of his name being Rufus. I love the name, but I was like, huh, I see what they did there. So a lot of fun.
All right. Let's get into BSC, BC, mm-hmm. BCS.
JMM, baby. So JMM now has a third meaning. So we know it's Jimmy Morgan McGill, which was what the monogram was originally intended to be. Then Jimmy, when he changes his name to Saul, decides, great, he'll just say it means justice matters most.
Right.
This episode, we get Lalo giving it a whole new spin, just make money.
Yeah.
Love it. And hey, guess what? We didn't have to wait too long to see if there was going to be a marriage between Kim and Jimmy.
Yeah, seriously. I didn't expect that to be right off the bat, yeah.
No. And so that's where we dive in. They are agreeing to have full disclosure going forward and leave the past in the past. And should Jimmy have the urge not to tell Kim something, or perhaps even tell her something that she's not going to like, he promises to tell her anyway. These were like their vows before the vows.
And they didn't talk about what we talked about last week as far as even it being like a I can't testify against you type of thing, which I'm surprised didn't come up.
Well, but he or says
did
it to
did
Huel.
I miss it?
He says it to Huel.
That's right.
So
that's
we
right,
know yeah. that they've had, we know that the discussion had been had.
Yeah.
So yeah, in the courthouse, I have Jimmy and Kim get married in the most unromantic ceremony ever. Yeah. Their witness Huel is the one. I love that they've got Huel there. I mean, I just love that they were able to bring him in for this. And he's the one, of Huel of all people, is suggesting like, oh, you got her knocked up, eh? And then he's like, well, don't you want to get her a ring at least? And he's like trying to even suggest some romance. Take her someplace. I've got a buddy with a, you know, a cabin in Boca Raton or whatever. Like, take her somewhere. And then that's when Jimmy does say, look, this is a business deal, a precautionary measure to ensure that they won't have to testify against each other. And then fun little moment. And let's just dive into this first kind of Easter egg, Breaking Bad Easter egg. So they're presenting their driver's licenses before the magistrate or whomever to get the license. And the person behind the counter asks for paperwork about his previous two dissolvements, his previous two marriages. Now, I had forgotten this, but in Breaking Bad, there's a Saul makes a couple of references about his previous marriages in conversations with Walt. And, you know, he makes like kind of off the cuff comments about one about like how his second wife was screwing his father or something like that, like this whole thing. So he's had some previous marriages here, making Kim his third marriage.
Yeah, which seems, like, obviously they put those lines in Breaking Bad way before they wrote out Saul's backstory.
Exactly. But
even knowing his backstory up until this point, it is weird that all of a sudden it was like, oh crap, we got to remember that he was married before. Cause it does seem like with all the flashbacks we've seen of his old life, with everything we've seen of his midlife, you know, everything up to this, there has been no hint whatsoever that he was ever married or even romantically tied to anybody.
True, but you know, they could have been short marriages and they could have been early, you know, younger days marriages kind of thing.
And I'm glad that they at least they addressed it, but it did sound like more of it was a way to kind of like, oh yeah, we gotta remember that he did mention multiple wives before. But I would have but the way he mentioned those wives too in Breaking Bad, because I saw that and read the lines that he wrote, they could have easily, the way Saul is, just been like, you know, bullshit lines he spouts anyway. So I wonder if we'll learn more about it at all.
But I appreciate they stuck to the canon. See, you
right, that's
saying,
what I mean.
They were throwaway lines in Breaking Bad. They didn't know they were going to do Better Call Saul at the time. But I appreciate that they stick to such detail of the original source show that they know, like, oh, we have to weave in these things into the story to make it fit. So I appreciate that. And of course, Dean, I screenshotted the driver's licenses that were shown, mostly because I just really wanted to see the years that were on them, to see if we could get. I'm thinking we're in like 2005 is where I'm thinking we are. So Jimmy's license was issued in 5/11/2002 and expires 5/11/2010. So I guess they have 8-year licenses there. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that on both these licenses, it's different addresses. So I was trying to place like what address this could be for Jimmy. I was wondering if it's possibly Chuck's old house, because we saw Jimmy bounce around a little bit. And then when he didn't really have a place to sleep in earlier seasons, he just slept in the back of the nail salon.
Right.
So I don't know if this address on his license is the nail salon or Chuck's house. Doesn't really matter. The other thing of note, I think, on the license is that his date of birth is November 12th, 1960. So if this puts it at 2004, 2005, he's like 44, 45. So very plausible that he could have had two marriages in his past.
Yeah.
Kim's license, yes, no middle name, does have an address with an apartment number. So I assume this is the current apartment that they're both living in. Her license was issued on August 3rd, 2001. So the expiration part is covered up by her thumb, but you can see the August 3rd. So if I'm counting 8 years, I'm presuming it expires 2009. not that that matters. And her date of birth, 2/13/1960-something. The it's cut off that final digit. So, but they're close in age.
Right.
I think it stands to reason that she's in her early 40s, maybe late 30s. Anyway, kind of fun there. I do love in the ceremony itself that the judge like wants them to like face each other. Like they're so robotic about it all. It's so awkward and weird.
Yeah,
and even that, you know, like the judge even they chose the short vows, and then the judge even has to tell them to kiss at the end.
Yeah,
you know,
and they seem like they barely wanted to do that. Like it didn't seem like a marriage of love in any way.
No, it was awkward. But then to break all of the tension, in hilarious hysterical moment, Huell's in the background snapping pictures with that disposable camera. Oh, I loved it. I love Huell. And then opening credits. Any more to say about this marriage?
No, just that even Kim, I don't know. I don't understand.
Kim kept her name. Kim kept the Wexler name.
Yeah, and I don't understand still. I get as surprising as it was last week when she told him they should get married. This just all seems like, I mean, you know, right off the bat, this is not a lasting, obviously we know this, but like even at the moment, it's like, this is just a bad decision.
I think that they don't want to be I like it. I don't think it's a bad decision. I think it's a pragmatic decision from Kim's perspective because she doesn't want Jimmy to withhold from her anymore. She wants to be told. Now, granted, Jimmy's further decline into Saul or full on decline into Saul, whatever you want to call it, most likely as he progresses down this cartel path, it's going to horrify her. That could drive her off because he's committed to being honest with her. Right. But I do believe that it was a marriage. I think there's love there. We do see the passion, you know, between them later on, although it's interrupted, but it resumes. So, I mean, I guess while they're not like these ooey gooey lovey dovey people, and actually that's kind of good, I appreciate that. I don't like, you know, public displays of affection and all that shit anyway. So they are very businesslike it throughout this, but I do think there is love there, and I do think that while Kim's approach to this is like, hey, here's the way, if I marry him then I'll ensure he'll always be honest and open with me, which is what I really want.
Right.
Little does she know she might not want it. But at the same time, she can sell it. And it's also true. If we're married, we don't have to testify against each other. And we can continue to do these things. In particular, you, Jimmy, can continue to do these things. And I won't, you don't have to worry about me potentially, you know. Anyway, so I liked it. I liked this move by the writers. And I appreciated that they recounted the throwaway lines of his first two marriages from Breaking Bad. Opening credits are of Saul's back and floor, or his floor, that floor massager for his back and neck. That's a weird contraption, but we've seen him on it several times throughout Breaking Bad. Anyway, after the ceremony, it's just a quick peck on the cheek and they go their separate ways, leaving the courthouse, but they do agree that they'll both be home early that night. And then Saul gets a call from Nacho, who actually had been trying to call him all throughout the ceremony, and he wasn't taking the calls. So Nacho's hot, and Nacho tells Saul that he's going to be representing Jorge de Guzman. And when Saul asks who that is, Nacho's reply, "Who do you think?" I loved it. Jorge de Guzman. Then, next scene, Jorge de Guzman, a.k.a. Lalo, is brought into the courtroom and placed next to Saul, and he is in chains, and they start to read all of these charges they have against him: murder in the first degree, armed with a deadly weapon, or robbery while armed with a deadly weapon, tampering with evidence, arson. And it could have gone on and on, but Jimmy interrupts and says the client waives the right to hear the remaining reading, and he pleads not guilty on all charges. And before anything else can be said, the judge denies bond. And sends Lalo back to his cell. So,
Lalo will continue this throughout, but I love just his face this entire, like throughout this entire episode. He just, he's in no worry. He's not worried in any way. Mm-hmm. Like he knows everything's going to be, you know, it's just, he's such a badass.
Oh, especially in the final courtroom scene, but we'll get there. I'm just going scene by scene because it was, there was no way to chop these up by character. And especially with the, with Jimmy being a through line with Kim, Lalo, and Mike. So anyway, meanwhile, while this is going on, Kim and Rich are sitting before Kevin. They're making a very heartfelt apology for everything that went on yesterday. So we know that all the shenanigans with Saul was just the day before. And they get married the next morning. And then Kim's back in Kevin's office apologizing. Kim says that being chosen for the Mesa Verde account was the best day of for her professional life. And yesterday was the worst day of her professional life. Paige is there. She reminds Kevin that they've opened 24 Mesa Verde branches in the span of 18 months. It's very impressive. And this has been the only hiccup. And stupid ass Kevin is still just pretty much a dick and leaves them just with a chastisement and sends them on their way. But before they can leave, Kevin does tell Kim that she can do better than this fella McGill or Goodman or whatever he calls himself. And then Kim and Rich get about halfway out of the office and she turns around, decides to go back and say her piece. She tells him, "You ignored our advice throughout all of this," and then lays out all the ways he declined all of their best guidance. She says, "Going forward, you're going to have to listen to us or else maybe this is the wrong relationship." And Kevin doesn't say a whole lot, but then as they're about to leave, he just says, "I'll see you Thursday."
Yeah.
So she did it once again. Kim saved the job. And, you know, she made some good points. I mean, she was, you know, she was not doing the right thing in the end here with this Tucum Carey business. But what she said before Kevin made sense.
Well, and she's, we know that Kim is really good at her job. She is an excellent lawyer. She is, and you know, I almost feel like the way Kevin is purposeful and not in a showboaty woke kind of way, but he is the, like, you know, the typical old school, not chauvinist, but like, you know, big manly man who refuses to admit that he's wrong and, you know, he's stubborn and everything. And she has multiple times given him advice that he doesn't like, but she puts it in a way to, like, and so it does, it's a good way to show how strong of a, not just a woman, but how strong of a character she is and strong as a employee that she is, you know, how competent she is and how, how well she is and smart she is at her job. So I think that's it's always a good sounding board when she goes against Kevin as like you said, you call him a dick, but it's not necessarily that he's a dick. It's just, he's, like I said, he's that typical character of the man who doesn't want to be told what he's doing, but I do like that he doesn't flat out go. But I'm glad he doesn't go so far as to be like, "I ain't going to let no woman tell me what to do." Cause I feel like they could go too far with that. And he doesn't, he does, like, by the end of it, know that she's right.
Wait, but furthermore, even more dickness, he thinks he has the right to tell her about her personal life and make judgment and say that she can do better. It's not his place, regardless of what he thinks about Jimmy.
I would agree with that sentiment that she could do better than Jimmy.
Well, yeah, of course, but it's not.
So I don't think he's wrong.
I think
anyone who knew
that
Kim
to somebody that you work with, I mean, not even, let alone a friend or a family member. I don't even know that I'd say it to anybody. But would you honestly say this to a colleague? You can do better than that person. I mean, honestly.
In that situation, I don't see what was wrong with that. They've had a working relationship for a long time. They have been friendly in the past, so you could say that he's looking out for her. And he even though he won't admit this, and she does a good job of covering it, it's pretty clear that this guy who, like, you have a boyfriend, or in this point a husband, who's literally trying to fuck over your work. As far as he knows, you know, he doesn't know that they're in cahoots. But like, I don't think he's off base by saying that.
I know, but you just, I was taught I was taught proper etiquette. You don't stick your nose into people's personal business. You know, you just don't. And so,
but if
I
you
don't
care, maybe he, you know, they haven't shown this too much, but I'm sure he does have some sense of like, he cares about her in a personal sense. You know, she's helped him so much that he probably does see it. And I'm surprised Rich hasn't, I mean, Rich has made comments, but I'm surprised he hasn't had more comments about like, you know, you're, this guy's going to ruin your life. Right. Like, I mean, we can all see that.
All right. It was not the proper time or place, especially to say it in front of Rich and Paige.
Right.
It's poor etiquette, dumb Kevin asshole, dick. I don't like it.
Right.
Anyway. Back in the jail, Saul is meeting with Lalo, and Lalo notices the monogram on Jimmy's briefcase, and Jimmy explains it stands for Justice Matters Most. And then Lalo assures him that his cover story, his identity, will stick. It won't be a problem. This Jorge de Guzman, no problem. And then Lalo says, you know, there's going to be no trial, no deal. No, he's very adamant about this. And Saul says, well, you know, well, then what do you want? And Lalo's like, you just have to get me out on bail. So this is evident that as soon as Lalo's out on bail, he is jumping, right? He's out of there. And, you know, of course he is. You know, Saul is just like, there's just no way I'm going to be able to get you out on bail. Like, the charges are stacked against you.
Right.
And Lalo leans in and asks him if he wants to be a friend of the cartel. And then he says, it's probably time to get yourself a new motto. Just make money.
And if you remember the first time we meet Saul, we talked about this before, about how he, when he's kidnapped by Jesse and Walt and taken out in the desert, even this is the first time we ever hear mention of Lalo and Nacho, but he even says, I'm a friend of the cartel.
Yes. He knows the words to use to make sure that nobody, you know, can put a hit on him. He's a friend of the cartel. He's protected.
Right.
You know, I might use that the next time someone kidnaps me and takes me out into a desert and threatens, you know, and I think my life's being threatened. I might just throw that out there. I'm a friend of the cartel.
Can't hurt.
It might stop the,
might work. Yeah.
The actions that are, you know, in front of me. Okay. So cut to Mike. He's reading to Kaylee a bedtime story. So I guess he and Kaylee are all good now.
Yeah.
And it's The Little Prince. I do love, I just love this scene, just seeing him just read this book. The Little Prince is a beautiful story.
Yep.
You've probably read it with your daughters. Yep. And of course, this is one of the books that he got from the library when he went to go meet with the librarian witness last episode. Then afterwards, a nice moment, even with Stacy, he helps Stacy finish the dishes. They have a sweet little talk about Maddie, and then Mike tells her that he's better now. She asks him what changed, and he says he's decided to play the cards he was dealt. So I think we're going to see full steam ahead Mike now. You know, he's been dealt the hands of, you know, that he's got to participate with Gus, and so he's going to just do it and accept it. And I like this. This is the Mike we know.
Yeah, and he's realized that it's, like you said, it's going to be more trouble trying to get out. He's already in, so trying to get out is going to be more trouble than just staying in. And I think he feels that if he stays in, he can at least somewhat control his situation, maybe.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Which he can.
Maybe.
He does, maybe. He does pretty well. I'll give him that. Yeah. He does pretty well for a good long while.
Yeah.
Then later that night, Kim and Jimmy get home. Kim says, how did your day go? I love Jimmy. He just kind of sheepishly laughs and says, well, I got married. And then they proceed to get down to business. It was kind of hot. I mean, it was kind of good. This is the most we've really ever seen from them.
She's hot, but then the whole time I'm thinking, like,
I know.
Gosh, she could do better.
Yeah, she looked great.
She looked great, and then of course they actually do a good job of not like making, like the last time we saw him and laying in bed and getting out of, they do a good job of not focusing on that, so you don't kind of feel it. But I did feel the whole time, I was like, man, she's so out of his league.
I know. Well, they get him at they do some better angles on him, and of course it's pretty dark in there, but yeah. they get funnier scenes with him later on. We'll get to that, but. You know, he does pick a very inopportune time in the heat of the moment to say that he's just had an urge not to tell her something. So What an idiot he is. But anyways, of course, she stops everything and insists that he tell her. And so he says, well, he's got a new client, a cartel guy from Mexico, high up. And he's in for murder, and he wants to get out on bail. You know, and if he can find a way to get him out on bail, then he'll be a friend of the cartel. And that means money, you know, like ranch in Montana and private jet kind of money.
Yeah.
And Kim asks him if he wants to be a friend of the cartel. And he says, oh, no, absolutely not. And he says, well, it's a moot point anyway, because there's, you know, all these charges. There's no way on earth that anyone's going to grant him bail. So he says he'll put on a good show. And it was just a thought. And he thought he should tell her. And then she says she's glad she told him. And I thought that was a really sweet moment when she assures him. And then they just get back to what they started.
There you go. Consummating that marriage.
Yeah, there you go. It's official now. Then we move to Lalo in his jail cell. He gets a cell phone slid under the door to him. Easy peasy. Of course, he calls Nacho, tells him he's got something for him to do. Yeah, I love they have a little bit of a talk about Crazy 8 for a second.
Yeah.
And he moves into, you know.
I just love when he gets the phone and his bunk mate looks over and he just waves him off with his hand. Just, again, just how badass Lalo is during this whole episode. I mean, he's always badass, but just especially just how confident he is, not worried. Like I said, not sweating at all. The fact that he's in jail, it's like, even if this doesn't work out, he knows something is going to, like, well, basically it says he's been here before.
I know. He is cool as a cucumber. I know. He's great. I'm going to miss this guy. I hope they keep him through the end of the show. I mean, like I said, they still have to build up the terror in Saul for him. So I feel like he's going to be around for at least a while. So after he tells Nacho he's got something for him to do, we cut to Nacho meeting with Mike and about to tell Mike exactly what Lalo's plans are. But first, Nacho tells Mike that he wants out. He says, okay, we've dealt with Lalo, and now you need to hear me out. He says, I want out, but if I disappear, the cartel's going to go after my father. So I need my father to go with me, but my father won't do anything unless the cops are involved. And he's like pretty much asking Mike for a solution to this. I don't know what he thinks Mike's going to do, but whatever. Mike does come up with some good plans. So,
yeah.
Okay, good for Nacho. It's the right person to lean on. But then he reveals that Lalo called him from inside of his cell, and put him back in charge, put Nacho back in charge, like we predicted, and that his next plans are to burn down, or that he wants Nacho to burn down a Los Pollos Hermanos. And so Mike gets really mad at hearing this and says, well, I guess he's not out of the picture then, is he? And then he just drives off, leaving a frustrated Nacho behind. And we get this really beautiful overhead shot of this remote area that they're meeting in. I did like that shot. Although there's my favorite shot of maybe the whole show is coming up later. Anyway, anything else to say about this scene?
No.
Well, then we move into a meeting, a board meeting, I guess, of Madrigal at Madrigal Electromotive in Houston. Talk about a great Breaking Bad callback. This was wonderful. It said they were in Houston on the wall. I don't know if you caught that, but they make reference to Cowboys later on. So they're in Houston. All the restaurant heads are there. Of course, we know Madrigal is this head company. That's, you know, the corporation behind Los Pollos Hermanos. We learned in Breaking Bad they owned several fast food chains. We saw a glimpse of them in later episodes of Breaking Bad. And sure enough, the same guy from Breaking Bad, his name is Peter Shuler. He's there. He's leading the meeting. And of course, this is the guy who once Gus was killed in Face Off, and the gig is up, or the jig is up, so to speak. This man learns about it and kills himself because
Remember the feds are at his door basically, and he runs to the bathroom.
I mean, this was a great foundation because we are already seeing his paranoia that leads to his inevitable suicide in just a few years. So I love that they laid this foundation, and another great Breaking Bad callback, bringing this character back in. Anyway, he turns to Gus. He tells him it's Gus's turn to report, and Gus brings in a sample to everyone and invites everyone to taste Los Hoyos Hermanos. Oh my God, Los
Hoyos
Hermanos. New delicious spice curls.
Yeah.
They're the curly fries with a southwestern kick. I love it so much.
I'm into it. I wanted some. Yeah,
I wanted some too. They look delicious. They looked a lot better than the samples that Peter Shuler was sampling in the Breaking Bad episode when he tried all the different dips.
Which I like that callback of him putting it in the ketchup. Yeah, the dipping.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was great. After the meeting, Gus gets the full rundown of his hotel room from a very thorough bellman. And I really thought he wasn't going to tip this guy. Like, I thought it was going to get real awkward there, but finally he does.
I know we talked a little bit about this a week or two ago, but we talked before about if Gus is potentially gay or not. And I actually got the vibe that, like, I kept waiting to see if they were, like, if he was going to, like, proposition him or something. Mm. Seemed like he was, but then I realized, oh no, this is just a bellboy who's like making sure he's hanging around, being as eager as possible to get a tip from this guy. But no, Gus is a good dude when it comes to that kind of stuff. I expected him to tip him.
Well, the thing about Gus is he likes the awkward moment. He likes the awkward silence. I think he lives for it. So he let this bellboy or bellman, whatever, hang on just a little too long with the is he or isn't he, and I appreciated it. Yeah, but in the end, yes, he did the right thing. And yes, Gus, you have a gazillion dollars. Always tip your bellman, of course. Yeah. Gus, of course. My goodness.
Yeah, anyway, and tip your local businesses if you order food from them during this COVID thing. Shout out to our friend of the show, Mike Hall at Atlanta Pizza and Euro. I was talking with him on social media last night about he's having issues of people getting to go and not tipping when they pick up food. I know usually if you get, you know, to go, maybe you don't tip, but these people are going out there running their business, taking the risk of,
throw a couple bucks at them, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
the
money's tight all around,
anything.
So I get it. But
but if you're going out to eat a lot, you know, if you're ordering food from somewhere as opposed to making it at home, you obviously are paying money for the food anyway. Mm-hmm. Help these people out.
I agree.
All right. Sorry. I digress.
Always tip. I mean, I'm a big, you don't, even when service is mediocre or even lousy, I still tip.
I still at least give something.
I just,
And I think that's the difference of people who have worked in the service industry and who haven't, you know, I was a waiter for 1 year when I was 18 years old, but that has always stuck in my mind for any time I've ever dealt with, you know, at a restaurant or anything. So
absolutely. Anyway, Gus, after the bellman leaves, Gus puts the do not disturb sign on his door and very meticulously and orderly starts to undress.
And did you get callbacks here to the other time we've seen Gus undress right before he slit someone's throat?
Yes. So I was thinking, like, oh, of course, every bit of his life is so orderly. Like, even he's putting things on the credenza and has to have them all lined up, his key card, his pen.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, you know, I actually applauded him here for good hotel room etiquette. You know, he's hanging up his coat, not just throwing it over a chair. I really appreciate that. As someone who used to travel a lot for work, I too practice good hotel etiquette and actually can't get comfortable in my hotel room until everything is all put away and in its proper spot. And
really?
I have traveled with people before. Uh-huh.
You put clothes in like the drawers and stuff?
If I'm staying for more than two nights, I do, yeah. If I have to stay because it's pain in the ass digging it out of the suitcase every day. So yeah, I mean, I do. And also, I've traveled with people before and I don't even understand. They get into hotel rooms and shit just goes flying everywhere and that's where it stays. No.
It's like a rented car. You just drive the hell out of it or you work the hell out of that hotel room. Who cares? It's not yours. It's not your mess to clean up.
Well, it is when it's your stuff. I mean, I can't throw. I mean, I've been with people who just like throw trash on the floor in hotel rooms. No.
Yeah.
No.
Who cares?
I clean my room before I hang my towels back up. I put all my trash in trash cans. If I've ordered room service, I stack everything all neatly back on the tray. No, I can't. I can't. Okay. Anyway, I digress. Let's see. once Gus is down to, you know, his casual look, which is his shirt, pants, yeah, and tie, no, yeah, jacket, no shoes. So he's comfy now. It gets a knock on the door from the adjoining room, and it's Lydia. Yay. She brings him into the next room, and we see Peter Schuler. He's in a bathrobe. And so it's unclear if they're staying in that room together. I was like, yeah, Lydia and Peter, I don't know about this. But anyway, Peter is very distraught. He is, yeah, extremely anxious to get back to that lab project, get it up and running. So it's evident here that he's been partnering with Gus on this lab, actually funding the money the whole time, which we knew from Breaking Bad, from when he kills himself in Breaking, right, Bad. But Gus tells him it's just not the right time until Lalo's dealt with, because even from jail, he still is creating issues. For instance, he ordered one of his men to burn down my restaurant, or one of my restaurants. And then Lydia has this great line, like, don't people in jail get shivved or shamed? Like, can't he be dealt with? She, you know, Lydia's gonna Lydia, right? And, you know, Gus says if anything happens to him in jail, the cartel will blame him, and it could mean war, for which they are unprepared. And then Peter is like, look, I've spent 4,800,000 euros, and, you know, I'm not going to be able to keep these auditors off my back for too long. And you know, Gus just starts to calm him down by saying, don't you remember Santiago? The two of us, our backs against the wall, I'll never forget what you did. You're still the same man, and you will do what is necessary. And he's going on and on. Stay strong. We're so close now. And then that seems to do the trick. So then they all have a champagne toast. And Lydia tells Peter that tomorrow they're going to go to the rodeo and see the Cowboys, and he'll just love it.
Yeah, this was really weird scene. Did he seem like drugged to you or something? Like, maybe. The way that they, just the way she even talks to, like, patronizingly talks to him, and the way, as weird as he seems, like, you know, I know he has paranoia problems, but he seemed weird. And then even when they all pour the champagne,
I took it as
he's the only one that drank
like
it,
a girlfriend. And when you see these, like, marriages where the age, yeah, like relationships where the ages are so far apart, right, the younger one is usually real subservient, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't worry, we're gonna.
But I noticed even like
tomorrow.
Gus doesn't take a sip of the champagne. He just holds it while the guy drinks it, and I couldn't tell if she had a, so it seemed, oh, I don't know, it seemed weird.
I mean, he definitely seemed like he was at his wit's end, so there could be who knows yeah, what else. I mean, he's probably on you know, like mood, whatever,
sure,
whatever,
yeah,
like things,
yeah,
to calm your nerves, I don't know, drugs,
yeah,
that are out
pilled
there
out or whatever, yeah,
yeah, right. But yeah, I did notice that Gus didn't drink, and I just figured he probably was
doesn't
probably
drink
because he didn't really want to be around them.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't think there was anything like, you know, funky in the champagne or anything.
Gotcha.
The next morning, Kim and Jimmy are getting ready for work, and Jimmy is reading about houses for sale in the paper to Kim. This is funny. They chuckle over the descriptions of the houses. Like, 5-car garage house.
Yeah.
That, how's that going to work? We only get 2.5 cars each. And I loved it. You know, like, they're cascading wildflowers and stuff. They're in, you know, and she's like, I'm an independent and, you know, person or whatever. It was real funny. Yeah. Jimmy, this is where I am getting a big laugh at Jimmy's wardrobe. He's got sock garters, Dean. What is this? 1930? Do you,
yeah,
wear sock garters, Dean?
No.
Do you know anybody who wears sock garters?
I've never seen those in real life. No, I've never seen them in real life.
I've seen them in movies and such.
Yeah.
So this was hysterical. I mean, I am sure there are fancy pants lawyers out there who are buying like 100% silk everything and probably,
right,
get like, you know, $50 pairs of socks that probably require garters hold them up because they're elastic free,
so,
or
loose,
whatever.
Yeah.
They're probably some specialty silk woven socks. So I imagine it still exists for the very rich, but I mean, Jimmy's not there yet.
Right.
I guess,
but he wants to be
for success.
Yeah. He tries to be. Yeah.
But still, what a pain in the ass. I mean, garters with like hose, like, you know, women's guard. I mean, those,
right,
things suck. Those are the worst. I can't imagine having it around your shin thinking that's,
yeah,
going to hold something up. I, oh God, but it was funny. It was a great aesthetic there. Anyway, after Kim leaves, oh my God, Jimmy gets a call. He's making about to make some juice. He's at his juicer. He gets a call from Mike. Mike says he needs a word, and Jimmy's ready to turn the tables on Mike from their last call. And he hilarious pulls that tunnel message. He's, oh, I'm in a tunnel, and starts to like start the mixer. Can't hear you. Can't talk right now. And then the doorbell rings, or knock on the door. And I love, he's still talking to Mike as he's going to the door. And then he reverts to this like best like Darth Vader / Mike impression. And he's like, whatever it is, it's not for me, and it shouldn't be for you either. He's saying, right, which is a callback to the Hummel heist from
Mike. Right, right.
I mean, Jimmy's just throwing Mike's words back at him. And I knew this was going to happen. I knew it, but it was still great. Jimmy opens the door, and Mike is standing there. I loved it. He says, come in, make yourself at home. You know, I'm in my underwear. Enjoy the show. You know, he's being great. And Mike tells him that you're representing Lalo, a.k.a. Jorge de Guzman. And Jimmy asks, how do you know him? And Mike says he represents someone who has an interest. Someone that your client can never know about. Pretty trusting of Mike to just immediately go there with this information. But Jimmy says he doesn't take his marching orders from the man behind the curtain. And Mike says, well, in this case, it's better that you do. And then he lays everything out that Jimmy will need in for his defense to get bail posted for Lalo.
Right.
And the final scene, as Jimmy's looking over all this paperwork, there is a photocopy of Fred Whalen's driver's license. And this is, of course, to remind us of poor Fred Whalen. He's that man that Lalo killed in the travel.
Now, are we to assume that Gus assumes, or Mike and Gus assume, that if Lalo just gets on bail, he'll just leave the country because he's having to skip for a while at this point? Like, that's why they're helping him get bail?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Or yeah, he's got, yeah. They can't touch him while he's in jail, so it's
right.
Not doing them.
That's right. Because he even says if something happens to him, that's right. He told that to them. If something happens to him, they'll look at me. Okay.
Yeah, I think their original plan was to get him in jail, but when they once they realized he could still run things from inside, it's not getting him out of the way.
So you think once he's out, they're still going to try to put a hit? They're going to try to get rid of him as opposed to him just hopefully running off for a while.
I don't know. I mean, I guess if he doesn't just hightail it out of town, you know, and peace out, then I guess they'll move on to the next phase. You know, they'll reformulate, they'll recalibrate the plan. But
yep.
I think right now it's one thing at a time. And Mike's leading the charge here, and we know he's no slouch when it comes to making a plan.
Right.
And so, of course, he's got the evidence that everything Jimmy needs to at least get bail posted here.
Right.
Bringing some new evidence to the court, which is coming up in just a second, as a matter of fact. But no, I think that the original plan was to send him to jail. That's not working. Now they want him out of jail. So So we'll see. Later that night, I loved this scene. I don't have a whole lot about it, but Nacho and Gus go to the Los Pollos Hermanos and completely destroy it and burn it down. Great scene, great musical score behind it with that like Hispanic song. And Nacho is just destroying the place. I mean, he's going over the top with his just destruction of everything. And then Gus is slowly turning on the gas. I liked the back and forth, but the cut Gus is being very methodical. Nacho's being extremely chaotic.
Yeah.
But Gus turns on the gas, starts the oil going in the fryer, and pulls a single frozen chicken from the fridge or freezer or whatever. And sets up this whole contraption so that it will slowly fall into the oil, giving him enough time before the explosion. And of course, this is the same, like, never put a frozen turkey into a vat of oil. Like, this is, so this is legit. And the gas, I know, only helped propel it. So I liked the real science at play here.
Yeah. But, and I love the way he sets it up. So it eventually starts stalling a little bit and then slides down the lever. It's awesome.
Yeah. So, but what makes me wonder is the fact that he has said in an earlier scene to several people that his chickens are never frozen. Is will this come back to haunt him somehow? Will it hurt him, you know, in the investigation that is yet to come?
That's funny. I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
Or, you know, maybe it'll be more evident that someone else did this. Like maybe it'll help him in the investigation, because if they right. try to say this was like insurance fraud or something, he could be like, no, my chickens are never frozen. Someone brought in a frozen chicken and did this and said, you know, right. so maybe it was part of his plan. I don't know. It was great. If you listen to the Insider, the Better Call Saul Insider podcast, they have a great interview this week with Juan Carlo Esposito talking about this scene in particular, and then also the production team in creating this scene. That is that they use practical effects. That's a real explosion.
Cool.
Really incredible. They actually did blow up a restaurant. They talk about what restaurant it was, a restaurant that had gone out of business nice. There that they doctored up to look like a Los Pollos Hermanos. But they also just credit to Juan Carlo Esposito, who plays Gus, because he is literally walking away from that explosion while it happened.
Really?
They were like, you know, we had one take, you know, it was an explosion for after all. But the fact that he didn't flinch
yeah.
anything was just incredible, incredible tribute to his acting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really awesome. All right. Coming up to the end here. Next, we see the prosecuting attorney is meeting with the detective on Lalo's case. And she is saying, she's reading it like a testimony clearly from Saul. And she's like, deep ties within his community. What ties? You know, she's like, what the hell? Then Saul busts in, puts on his little song and dance, says, I've heard about this private eye of yours, this Dave Clark, this third party who coached your key witness. You know, and of course, we all know that's Mike.
Yep.
So Saul says that, and he's like, I'll see you in court before the judge. And then next, they are in court. And this time, sitting behind Lalo and Jimmy is a family, a woman, two children, and a little bit of an older woman. And they're later pointed out to be Lalo's wife, his stepchildren, in fact, the only father these children have ever known, and also his mother-in-law. So I love that, you know, Jimmy's got these staged family sitting back there for effect. But then the real family, the family that's causing great concern to Saul, sitting behind the prosecutor's side is Fred Whalen's family. And they are just very visibly distraught. I mean, they're crying. You can just see the pain on this poor family's face.
Fucking Lalo.
I know.
Gives the kiss face to one of them staring at him. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's awful. Lalo has no clue who they are and does not care. Wait, no, he gives the kiss face to his family, not to Fred.
No, because he asks who are these other family, like when he asked them, like, who's this other family looking at me? And he looks at them and like gives that face to them, I think, before he finds out who they are, but he still didn't care. He couldn't
care
less.
He doesn't care. Lalo's a dick too, actually. Lalo's a serious, like Lalo's a serious dick. Kevin's, you know, a superficial, stupid dick. Lalo's a real serious, down to earth asshole dick. Okay, so, you know, I love this too, Bob Odenkirk. Saul's given his directorial, you know, cues, like, you need to look humble and you need to play to the judge, but not overplay it. And Lalo's like, okay, I got you.
Got it.
Anyway, but just great acting by Bob Odenkirk as he continues to flinch and get little pangs of guilt when he thinks about this family sitting over there. And Lalo says, who are they? And Jimmy says, you know, that's Fred Whalen's family. And this is when Lalo's like, eh? And Jimmy's like, you know, the travel wire guy. Yeah, and you're right. That's what he's like. Well, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway. And then there's this, like, slowed down inner, Jimmy's in his own head moment. I like this effect. Everything slows down around Jimmy, and there's this close-up on his face. Great face acting. You can see the pain in his face as he's looking at the Whalens.
Yeah.
And the judge comes in and is talking, but Jimmy doesn't react at first while he's focusing in on the pain of the Whalens. But then he does snap right out of it. He tells the judge there's been witness tampering. He goes right into his song and dance, and that the prosecutor's key witness was coached by a private investigator who was hired to pervert justice. And the prosecutor admits that this has only recently come to their attention and that they're vigorously investigating it. But nonetheless, they're asking the court to recognize De Guzman as a flight risk with no community ties. And it is also worth pointing out that anytime the camera's panning back and forth between Jimmy and this woman prosecutor, who are both standing and addressing the judge. And anytime we get the scenes of Jimmy, did you catch the gross black stained ceiling tile that was in the frame above him, kind of behind him?
No. Oh, I yes, mean, I did was, in the back. Yeah, yeah.
Like the dirtiest ceiling yes. tile I've ever seen in my life, with just an evident black stain, which I'm sure was meant to be symbolic of the stain that's on Jimmy's soul, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was a nice touch. Jimmy points out that Mr. De Guzman actually does have, it's my typos, sorry, my voice to text typos, actually does have deep ties to the city of Albuquerque, including his family, his wife and stepchildren, mother-in-law, who are there. And, you know, this, my client, these are the only, he's the only father these children have ever known, and they depend on him. And how can you deny him his beautiful family? He says that the testimony that's holding his client is to this crime has been fabricated, and the judge brings them in for a brief sidebar and then finally does grant bail at $7 million because of the severity of the charges. But after the judge leaves the court, Lalo leans over to Saul and says, yeah, $7 million, I can do that, but I'm going to need you to pick it up. And then he is taken back. He's escorted back to his cell. Great scene.
Yes.
Great Bob Odenkirk scene. Great Lalo, Tony. I don't know why his name is escaping me now. The actor who plays Lalo is Tony something or other. He's really.
But again, another point in this episode where he's just like, "Oh yeah, we can get that. Not a big deal." Yeah. He in no way worried about anything. Yeah. Love it.
All right, the final scene, the best scene, my favorite scene, maybe in the whole run of this show so far. I put it up there with chicanery, Dean. Starts with Jimmy peeking around the corner. He's out in the hallway of the courtroom now. And this is probably the coolest camera shot, mm-hmm. I think, that Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad have ever done. This is his face coming around the corner, spying on the prosecutor, talking to the Whalen family. He can't hear what they're saying. He's very interested in hearing it, but you can see it in his face. But only half of his face is revealed around the corner, and the other half of his face is reflected on this shiny, shiny wall. And it's this perfect mirror image. I'm sure they had to do a few practice shots to get this right, but it's beautifully done. I really appreciated that.
It is, but it's a great mirror, but I do like that it wasn't, because I even thought, like, oh, are they going to, like, try to line it up to where it's, like, almost perfectly his face, which would have been cool, but would have been obvious, but like, I like how it's still somewhat like it's not quite perfect. It makes his like face look distorted and weird, because it is that idea of like it's Saul versus Jimmy right now, as far as his conscience and making money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. This dichotomy that he's had, you know, that he's struggling with. All right. So he's interrupted by Howard Hamlin.
Yeah.
So great. Howard asks him if he's thought any more about the job. Jimmy's really just trying to blow him off because he wants to keep listening on this conversation. He says, yeah, I'm still giving it some thought. And he tries to go back to spying, but Howard won't leave and says, well, it seems that I've upset you, Jimmy, so the offer is actually off the table. This definitely gets Jimmy's attention. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about, Howard. Tell me. And, you know, you're being kind of weird, Howard. And Howard says, you know, don't you think it's weird to offer a job to a man and then have bowling balls thrown at your car and prostitutes sent to your business lunch? So busted. But what does Jimmy do when he gets busted? Same thing Chuck does when he gets busted, right? Backs against the wall. Can't just admit it. Can't just admit, you're right, I was pissed. I did the wrong thing. I'm sorry. I won't, you know, just nothing. Never can admit and take ownership. Much like Chuck, when it's revealed that he was faking his whole electronics illness, you know, and he does is just start screaming and going off on Jimmy rather than take any of the onus himself. And that's exactly what Jimmy does here. He goes, he's, goes completely off on Howard. It's just a total doozy. Even Howard in the beginning is saying, I'm sorry, you're in pain. And Jimmy says, you're sorry, you kill my brother and say you're sorry. Ugh, that was a dagger. And then he says, you have no idea what's going on in that. You're a teensy tiny man in a teensy tiny, tiny bubble. And Howard is still going, oh, Jimmy, like, come on. And this is where we get the F-bomb. Jimmy says, don't you fucking know Jimmy me? Do you know why I didn't take the job? Because it's too small. It's nothing to me. I travel in worlds you can't even imagine. You can't conceive what I'm capable of. And by this point, he's screaming it, and Howard's walking away, and he's still screaming. I'm so far beyond you. I'm like a god in human clothing. Lightning bolts shoot from my fingertips. God. Self-absorbed much?
Anyway, well, it's just like you said, he's just going off the deep end. And, I mean, he's mentally breaking. Oh, not mentally breaking, but just he's so emotionally rattled by what he just did, I think. Mm. You know, because he now has stepped over that line to where he is not just a sleazebag lawyer, but now he's, like, fucking defending people he knows for a fact murdered somebody. Like, you know, it's not even like he could fake, like, well, I don't really know. Like, no, he knows this guy killed him. He saw how lifeless and careless he was about it. And he just set him free, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just pushes the, he's got the guilt of the family. He feels, he feels something for this family. And he just keeps pushing it down, because it's going to be, just make money. Well, you know, after he gets done saying his piece and Howard has left, Jimmy just straightens his tie and slowly turns and walks away and kind of fades out of vision. And then we cut to credits. I loved this ending. I loved this episode. And it was, you kind of knew that there had to be a third beat to this Howard and Jimmy thing, right? There had to be words had to be exchanged, but Howard, man, he is namaste. He didn't break. He didn't scream back. He didn't fight back.
Well, because it's a very interesting turn that they went with Howard. Like we talked about how he was kind of the antagonist for almost two whole seasons to Jimmy, kind of being the backer of Chuck. And now he really has turned that corner where I think he felt so bad about, Chuck and how he treated Jimmy in the past. And he really did try to turn the corner and do the right thing and be the bigger person. And I think he does feel bad for Jimmy. And unfortunately it's to the point now where I've done all, like, you know, it's like, a parent who has a drug addicted child and they've tried to help him and help him and help him. And finally, sometimes they just have to say, like, there's nothing else I can do. Like, I hate it for him. And he's kind of just washing his hands of him.
That's right. You know, this season really didn't have a great place for Howard Hamlin. I was worried about how they were going to fit Patrick Fabian in, and Howard's a character I always love having on the scene. And so I was appreciative that they have found unique and interesting ways to weave Howard into the story and keep him relevant. It didn't feel like it was forced with any of this Howard stuff, right?
Right.
To me.
It was a good way to show, again, more of Jimmy melding into Saul. I think this actually has pushed him more into Saul. And even this last confrontation, it's almost his way of, like, if he were to go for the Hamlin McGill job, it's his last chance of doing something, like, legitimate, or, you know, not legitimate, but, like, walking down that path of a lawyer, and I'm going to do it the way it's always been done, and the path of Chuck. as opposed to doing it his own way and taking risks and still being able to skirt the law, you know, or walk that gray line. He doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. This is his decision. I'm finally, like, I'm going down this road instead of that one.
It does concern me about how much, though, going forward, they're going to be able to keep Chuck in. Like, for instance, we've got three episodes Howard? Left this season. I don't think we'll see Chuck again this season.
You mean
how
Howard?
Are they going to keep him in the story next season?
You mean Howard?
Oh my God, Howard, yes.
Yeah, I'm no, him. I'm sorry. I wouldn't be surprised if we ever do see Howard again. It will almost just be like, if Jimmy gets himself into something, it's almost like a side thing where Howard almost just like, oh, I knew that was going to happen. I think this is actually a good close for his character where we don't necessarily need to see him anymore.
Oh, come on. We got to see him again.
No, he's great, but
him.
I don't think
to be his final scene.
Yeah, but like I said, I just don't feel like he fits in the story anymore. They're past that.
Let's just say things go south between Jimmy and Kim, which is inevitable. Will she turn to Howard? Will she go to Howard for advice or assistance?
Potentially.
That could bring
him
back in.
Or could even go back to her or go work for him or something like that.
Or a little bit more.
Bam. And he's much better looking than Jimmy.
Kids, I don't know. I don't know Howard's story. I don't remember. Anyway, in the trailer, it definitely looks like Jimmy's going to get that money.
Yeah.
And they don't show much in the trailer. I am very excited for the final three episodes. We're on full steam ahead. It's just going to keep getting better and better. So, Dean, who broke the most bad this episode?
Man, a lot of characters had really good moments. You have Gus deciding to take another self-sacrifice hit and blow up his own restaurant. Mm-hmm. You have Jimmy, of course, breaking down and doing all this craziness. Although I've been saying it the whole episode, so my favorite performance this week and the person I think was just the most cold-blooded is Lalo, and in such a subtle way too. And that's what I loved about his performance. Yeah. Every time he was on screen, he acted with just such subtleness in his face, and that expression he has almost constantly of just almost like carefree, as if he's just walking down the street on a sunny day, but sitting in prison, getting the phone, just not surprised by it at all, picks it up, waves the guy off in the courtroom, just seeming like it's just another day in his life. It just so cold-blooded. I love mm-hmm. this performance.
I started to give it to Lalo too, but you know me, that end scene is always the one that gets me, and Jimmy stole the show once again. Bob Odenkirk, give this man an Emmy, please, if we ever get Emmys again.
Yes.
You know, now that Game of Thrones, now that they're not up against Game of Thrones, you know, or whatever was always beating them out in this category, this is the year that Better Call Saul better get some recognition. I'm just saying. However, I'm going to give it to Jimmy because of that final scene with Howard. I mean, he just, you know, he's in so much pain and anguish. We can see it all over his face as he observes this Weyland family. He knows every bit of everything he's doing is wrong. He does it anyway. He knows the ramifications that's going to have on his conscience and on his soul. And then he just proceeds to take it right out on Howard. Like, he's
right.
Been, you know, Howard's just been his what is it? Like, his punching bag.
Yeah.
This whole season. So it's Jimmy. I enjoyed the performance. I'm just going to remark about how sad his trajectory is, but we knew this was the direction it had to go in to get him to be the scumbag lawyer that he is in Breaking Bad. So,
right. And that's what this season is all about. Like, you know, last season it was all about Saul the beginning of Saul. And this season is all the transformation. And we're seeing still him fighting. And this episode was a great episode of seeing, like, I mean, that courtroom scene where you can feel he's holding back tears, where he almost wants to cry because of this family. He knows that he's doing wrong. Like, this is, like we said, the first time that his lawyer skills, or whatever you want to refer to his skills as, but like, this is the first time he really sees a face to what he's like hurting, as opposed to fighting against a corporation or fighting against people that are just really rich and taking their money. Like, this is a huge step for him as a like we said, that bad lawyer of, now I'm defending people and I see a face to the victims, and that humanity is about to be there when he's watching the family in the hall. And then, like I said, like we said, Howard makes him take that shield back up and push all that back down. And so I think we're going to see less and less Jimmy as we move forward, more and more of Saul. And of course, as we've kept saying, that's eventually got to be what drives Kim away.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other predictions that you want to make here for the final three episodes that you think that's going to happen this season?
I'm hoping that we're going to get a big showdown between Gus and Lalo, or maybe Mike and Lalo. I guess that would probably be the more apt or more likely scenario of Mike going after Lalo, but we'll see some conclusions there. I'm worried that I'm hoping that they don't push Nacho's end at the end of this season and we get more of him next season, but I could see them almost, if something's going to happen to Nacho, it could possibly happen by the end of this season.
I'm kind of thinking that by next season, there's a chance Tuco will be back.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, they gotta thin the herd here with the Salamanca. So I think this might be what we know is that in Saul's mind, in a few years from now, he is still terrified of both Lalo and Nacho, so that neither one of them could die, because otherwise when he's being, or at least they could die,
he doesn't know,
but Saul not know about it, which seems a little suspect. So it seems like if that happens, they have to die within a few months, because if it's been years and years that they've been dead, when he gets dragged out to the desert with Walt and Jesse, he's not going to be afraid of them if he hasn't heard from them in years. So I think they've got to stick around. I think the death that we could potentially be seeing this season, and I'm sorry to say that the one that makes the most sense to continue to propel the cartel characters forward is the death of Nacho Grande.
Oh, yeah.
Because that will send Nacho into such, and for those who are just listening for the first time, thank you. We call Nacho's father Nacho Grande. So that would propel Nacho's anger so far forward to be so hell-bent to keeping in with the Salamancas in order to just seek out revenge, right? I do think that eventually Nacho is going to die, because we know Tuco and Hector go on, you know, we know the twins go on.
Right.
So Nacho clearly is, you know, something's got to keep these characters continuing to spiral downward. And I think the death of his father, whom he's so desperate to protect, will be his next steps into his descent. Sad to say. But I think we will leave it with Kim and Jimmy still married, and him still trying to possibly, you know, he'll get Lalo out on bail. Lalo possibly will skip town, but maybe still, but that could potentially create some problems for Jimmy. I don't know, legalities when your client, you know, bail or, you know, skips out on bail, what happens? I don't know.
Yeah. I still hold hope that next season we do get kind of a conclusion to this story, by, because we said it's 13 episodes the last season, right? So I'm hoping by that 10th episode we almost get a conclusion to Better Call Saul as far as the past that we've known, and then we finally do get almost a 3-episode mini series of future, of, you know, of the black and white future.
Agreed.
But finally come to you know, we see the conclusion of that, and I hope they extend that, because I'm still very interested to what goes on there.
Oh, same.
Of course, that could be seven years from now, so who knows?
Sure, yeah, I know. They probably haven't even started production, or they had started production, but I'm sure it was early stages, and it's all come to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I just hope that COVID doesn't get any of them. I mean, you know, Jonathan Banks is no spring chicken.
Right. Absolutely.
Could you imagine how that would really rock the, I mean, again, this is first world problems. There are people really out there suffering, and I'm not making light of it. But how could that affect, like, the show before, like, there's probably going to be shows that were in the, not meant to be canceled or ended, but a famous so-and-so died, and so the show just can't really go on. What would happen if Jonathan Banks ended? His character needs to be in the final season. Would they seriously recast him?
No, they'd find a way to just say, because, you know, like,
I think they'd just end the show. That'd be it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's because Saul and Mike weren't like, you know, I know Saul hooks Mike up with them eventually, but Saul's business with them was kind of done, you know.
Yeah, until but all he the Gus Walt. Stuff, all the Dodger stuff, and Mike's got his own storyline going. So to just be like, oh, we're going to do the final series or the final season without Mike Ehrmantraut, there would be a big gaping hole in this, and it would be impossible to write around. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, so I don't want to put it out there in the universe. But I imagine it's going to affect some production of some shows and movies out there.
That's why it's so going important to
all industries.
Wash your hands, people. Stay at home.
God. I don't even know if that's going to help. I think it'd just be better if we all just got it and got through it.
Chicken pox parties, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, geez, we got to get back to work. We've got to get back to work. This country cannot handle this financial crisis.
All right, we're going to bring in Wes Moss here to talk about
the
economy.
Do the silence. All right. We didn't get any emails this week, so hey. We're not moving to our new thread or our new stream until we start getting some emails. So if you want us on our own stream, hit us up with an email or a tweet. You can send us an email, miketvpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at miketv1 or at rockdale_tiger.
And let us know your predictions for how Better Call Saul is going to end the season. Roby, we didn't hear from you this week. Roby, where are you? Let us know. Give us some more Better Call Saul thoughts. In addition to writing in about Westworld, which is the other show we're covering right now. And then when those two shows end, there's not a whole lot of new shows coming out. So we have a plan. Don't worry. We have lots of things to talk about. Mike TV has a plan. We're going to move away from deep dive talks and into, smaller bite-sized talks of shows. So get excited for that. It's coming soon because Better Call Saul has 3 more episodes and Westworld has 5. So we're essentially 5 weeks away, give or take, from our new format. That's exciting. So anyway, we hope to hear from you. And Dean, I appreciate you joining me today and talking about Better Call Saul as always.
Of course.
So everybody, until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I am Dean.
And please remember to
keep it thorough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.